The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Carrie Lawson from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Magazine. Heading over into lifestyle in the wellness section, why you keep waking up at 3 a.m. Hormones are only part of the picture. This article is by Florella Faldisolo. Almost every night for the past 6 months, Sarah, 46, a marketer based in Portland, Oregon, woke up around 3 a.m., with her mind immediately racing, not groggy at all, and almost every day following, she'd feel the aftermath of those early wake-ups. She was irritable, her brain felt mushy, and she was exhausted. Referred to colloquially as the 3 a.m. wake-up, it's the subject of many a middle-aged group text thread. But while it may be easy to just shrug and blame menopause, there are a number of reasons why this could be happening and, thankfully, a number of ways to go about addressing it. What hormones have to do with it? While the early morning wake-up is not limited by gender or age, women tend to experience it more frequently during menopause, insomnia can either become more extreme during the transition or, if someone previously never had an issue, begin at that time, says Sandra Chu, an acupuncturist and traditional Chinese medicine, TCM, practitioner in New York. For some women, HRT can offer relief from their sleep issues. In her recent book, The New Menopause, board-certified OBGYN Mary Claire Haver, MD, shares how she tried melatonin, meditation, and tweaking her sleep hygiene to address her nightly wake-ups, before eventually finding success with HRT. Symptoms commonly associated with menopause, like hot flashes, night sweats, and more frequent urination, are part of the reason for the disruption, says Asima Ahmad, MD, a reproductive endocrinologist and co-founder of Carrot. But the change also brings an increased chance of developing sleep apnea, a potentially serious sleep disorder, wherein breathing repeatedly stops and starts. Recent research found a link between obstructive sleep apnea, OSA, and menopause, showing that dips in estrogen can impact the muscles of the upper airway. Left untreated, says Ahmad, OSA can put women more at risk for heart disease, and studies have shown that disruptive and poor sleep can skyrocket cortisol levels. Often the signs of sleep apnea in women are subtle and may include feeling sleepy in the daytime, difficulty staying focused, weight gain, waking more than once in the night to use the bathroom, morning headaches, mood changes, and decreased libido, says Rachel Ziegler, MD, a sleep medicine physician at the Mayo Clinic Health System. The big S affecting your sleep. Regardless of age or gender, stress can play a significant role in sleep disturbances. Stress hormones like epinephrine and cortisol stimulate our brains and make us more alert, says Jillian Goddard, MD, an endocrinologist and the writer of the Hot Flash newsletter at Parent Data. This is helpful if you need to run from a tiger, but not if the threat is all the things you need to remember and accomplish for the day ahead. But why is the wake-up always at 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. or whenever your own particular accursed time is? A quick survey of your midlife friends will most likely bring up plenty of grumbles about these wake-ups, with 3 a.m., anecdotally at least, seeming to be a common time for restlessness. According to Ziegler, it's not clear why that specific time is so common, but there are many reasons why we might wake up, including low oxygen, hormonal changes, mood disorders, bathroom breaks, and disruptions in our normal day-to-day routines. If you go to bed at a regular time every night and have started having nightly wakings at the same time each night, it could be that that's the time your body usually reaches a stage of light sleep, where once you might have rolled over and gone back to sleep without remembering in the morning, issues such as those referenced by Ziegler could be waking you up completely. What you eat impacts your rest. When Vivir LaArts, a Brooklyn-based strength and mobility coach, started consistently waking up around 3 a.m., her doctor initially prescribed hydroxyzine, an antihistamine used off-label to improve sleep. It didn't work. What did? Eating dinner earlier. I'm always done by 7 p.m. and then lights out by 9:30 now, says Arts. Chiu explains that having your last meal earlier in the evening often makes for higher quality sleep because your body isn't struggling to digest food through the night, adding that in TCM, it's believed that the stomach system must be at peace for the heart system to be in balance. What's on your plate matters too. A well-balanced Mediterranean-style diet is what's favored by sleep experts, while a heavy or spicy meal close to bedtime can result in indigestion, ergo a mid-sleep wake-up. Some people are also, adds Goddard, prone to developing low blood sugar after a high-carb meal. This happens when you are sleeping, and the symptoms will wake you up, she says. To go down easy, don't raise a glass. While the idea of unwinding with a cocktail is culturally ingrained, what's less widely understood is how said drink will likely help you fall asleep, but not stay asleep. Besides dehydrating the body, which can have its own wakeful effect, alcohol dramatically disrupts the natural sleep cycle. First, it acts as a sedative. Then, as the body metabolizes it, sleep becomes more disrupted. The real reason for a ritual. Keeping a consistent sleep-wake schedule is important, as many body functions, including mealtimes, rely on this internal clock, says Ziegler. Waking up and going to sleep around the same time every day is ideal. But always engaging in the same pre-bedtime ritual is also a good idea to help you stay asleep. Rebecca Robbins, PhD, an assistant professor of medicine at Harvard and sleep scientist at Brigham and Women's Hospital, suggests picking three activities, like, say, a breathing exercise, a warm shower, and reading for 10 minutes, that you can ritualize every night to help nudge the body into deep sleep mode. With this ritual, we start to condition ourselves and our bodies and our brains to understand what happens after those things is sleep, she adds. How not to sweat it. In her new book, Haver says that when menopause telehealth company MidiHealth polled its 22,000 members, sleep disruption and hot flashes were in the top five menopausal symptoms. Hot flashes and the accompanying night sweats can be a regular culprit for those early morning wake-ups. HRT is a gold standard for these symptoms, and thereby halting the sudden wake-ups with intravaginal DHEA, a steroidal hormone. Supplementation has also proven to be helpful. Last year, the drug, Veozah, was approved by the FDA for hot flashes, and that's spelled V-E-O-Z-A-H. but it's not widely covered by insurance. If night sweats are a reason for your continued wake-ups, Goddard suggests keeping a towel and a spare set of PJs bedside. You're awake again. Now what? Nothing is worse than lying there, thoughts spiraling and realizing the sun is about to rise. Try these tips to get back to sleep fast. Muscle your way. If you find yourself awake, Robbins is a fan of progressive muscle relaxation, a practice of focused flexing and releasing paired with intentional breath. Inhale, clench toes and feet. Exhale, release. Then slowly move up the body. Write it off. Goddard likes to keep a small notebook by her bed for when she wakes up with a racing mind. Just jot down the worries or to-dos to get them out of your brain, she says. Refresh your memory. Sometimes recalling a specific happy memory, maybe it's something from the previous day or a recent vacation, in granular detail, the smells, the sounds, etc., can, says Robbins, help lull you back to sleep. Get up, stand up. One of the biggest myths about sleep is that if you stay in bed, you'll get some sleep, says Robbins. Get up and go somewhere you can read or do another quiet activity, not phone scrolling, until you feel sleepy again. This article is also in Wellness and continues on with the sleep. Break these sleep rules for better rest tonight. Cool room, no phone, early bedtime. In what universe? Try these loopholes approved by sleep scientists. This article is by Tina Chadha. In the quest for well-being, sleep is non-negotiable. It's a critical health process, says Arik Prather, PhD, a psychologist and sleep scientist at the University of California, San Francisco, and author of the new book, The Sleep Prescription. If you carve out time for it, you'll be more efficient, you'll be more creative, you'll be a better partner and a better parent. And yet we constantly sacrifice our restorative slumber to answer one more email or watch one more episode. Does this mean we're doomed? Nope, says the experts. Not with these smart workarounds. Focus on wake time instead of bedtime. Paradigm shift. A good night's sleep actually starts first thing in the morning. Our wake-up time is the single most important cue for setting our internal biological clocks, also known as our circadian rhythm, says Wendy M. Troxell, Ph.D., a senior behavioral scientist at RAND, R-A-N-D, Corporation, and the author of Sharing the Covers, Every Couple's Guide to Better Sleep. The theory is that if you stick to a consistent wake-up time, you'll get sleepy around the same time each night, thus creating a strong, natural routine. The catch is that ideally it's the same time 7 days a week, including weekends, since people who have erratic wake-up times generally have poor sleep quality and trouble falling asleep, says Troxell. But since rising at 6 a.m. on Saturday is just cruel, especially if you don't have a toddler staring you down from the side of the bed, Troxell allows some wiggle room. Just aim for within 2 hours of your weekend time to preserve the rhythm. And for those glorious nights you go out and stay out way too late, YOLO, it's what makes life worth living, says Prather. You're resilient. A few off nights won't do you in. Keep that TV in your bedroom. If an episode of Selling Sunset lulls you to sleep, so be it. Any wind-down ritual that helps you decompress and shake off the day before your head hits the pillow is legit. So, figure out which low arousal activity works for you, whether reading a book, listening to a podcast, taking a bath, or watching TV. The experts are right about social media, though. Skip it. While Prather likes rewatching sitcoms like The Office, you don't need to know what happens next. It's engaging, but not so much that you're going to binge. Jade Wu, PhD, a sleep psychologist and researcher at Duke University School of Medicine, prefers to read murder mysteries and watch action movies. It takes my mind off the other stuff that would be churning otherwise, she says. Instead of worrying about my finances, for example, I'll watch 007. Stress you'll get revved up? Don't be. A recent study published in the February 2023 issue of Sleep Medicine finds that watching suspenseful series and cliffhangers at bedtime has minor effects on sleep. There is no one-size-fits-all rule, says Wu. Know thyself and know what works for you. One tip for your Hulu habit? Keep the lights low. Under darkness, our brains start releasing melatonin, the hormone that kickstarts sleep. Be as cool or cozy as you like. To find your sleep temperature sweet spot, experimenting with layers is the way to go, since research shows that ideally you want the ambient temperature to be cooler than your personal temperature, a figure that can vary widely. Ultimately, though, you just want to be comfortable. Science be damned. I run cold. I can't imagine putting my room to 65 degrees, says Wu. My house is set to 72, and I sleep totally fine. Instead of following a specific number, Wu recommends just going by your feeling. Your body has a very sophisticated set of sensors that will tell you if you're too cold or too hot, she says. So if you feel too hot, take off layers or set your room colder. If you feel cold, put on layers or set the room warmer. Scrap the bedside worry notepad. Stress has a sneaky way of tapping you on the shoulder in the middle of the night, and in the blink of an eye, you're lying there thinking about bills, the appointments you forgot to make, that embarrassing thing you said at the office, what's inside black holes, or hello, that you're not sleeping, and tomorrow is going to be a disaster. We've all heard the tip about getting a pad on your nightstand, sitting up and jotting down your angst in the moment. Instead, Prather teaches patients in his clinic a tactic called scheduled worry. It's exactly what it sounds like, putting time on your calendar during the day to just stress. You take 15 to 20 minutes and write down all the things you're worried about, he says. Then, when you wake up in the middle of the night, you can remind yourself, look, I already worried about this when I was better suited to do it, and I have it scheduled again for tomorrow. The process is really helpful for people to let go. Enjoy that glass of wine. Just sip it on the earlier side. We like to think of alcohol as a sleep-inducing nightcap, but it can disturb sleep, particularly REM sleep, which is really important for memory, learning, and emotional processing, says Troxell. However, if you enjoy some Pinot Noir, hand-raised, and have a generally healthy sleep routine, don't deprive yourself. Have a little before or with dinner rather than on the sofa after. Forget the idea of sleep rules, period. Making sleep a priority paves the way to better health. But obsessing about it doesn't do you any favors, because that's when problems like insomnia arise. Don't put so much pressure on sleep, says Troxell. Just set the stage so that most nights are predictably going to be a good night of sleep, and you aren't going to be stressed about it, Wu concurs. Her advice: adopt a more accepting attitude toward sleep. When you're not sleepy, don't force it, she says. Maybe your body isn't sleepy right now, and that's okay. Instead, do something fun. Grab a good book or watch a movie and make the most of your awake time. This is another article in Wellness: Hot Flash Help for Women Who Can't Do Hormone Therapy. Want relief in, we kid you not, a day? From antidepressants to hypnosis, these treatments actually work. This article is by Lisa Arbetter. Jennifer McDonald was 38 when she found out she had breast cancer. 2 years later, she had her ovaries removed, abruptly throwing her body into menopause. I immediately started having probably 25 hot flashes a day. No exaggeration, she says. It was not fun. I would sweat through my clothes and my sheets at night and be cranky and uncomfortable all day. I think when you go into menopause surgically and not naturally, your body is like, what the hell just happened? Symptoms from surgical menopause can often be more drastic, and since they may occur at a younger age, they last longer. That means extra years without estrogen to protect your bones and heart, and an increased risk of fractures, osteoporosis, and cardiovascular disease. As if that weren't enough cancer-related havoc, the risk of a recurrence also meant that McDonald wasn't a candidate for the most effective treatment for hot flashes, hormone therapy, HT. HT replaces the hormones lost during menopause, namely estrogen and progesterone, but estrogen-dependent cancers, like some breast and uterine cancers, use estrogen to develop and grow. In other words, HT could help cancer regain its foothold. Women with a history of blood clots, stroke, and significant heart disease are also not candidates for HT, and some women simply don't want to use hormones. To help this cohort and their healthcare providers understand their options, the Menopause Society recently updated its recommendations for evidence-based non-hormonal management of vasomotor symptoms, VMS, also known as hot flashes and night sweats. The position statement, released in June 2023, includes recommendations for prescription and non-prescription therapies, plus a rundown of treatments that the org does not recommend due to a lack of supporting evidence. Those include acupuncture, herbal supplements, and yoga. These options made their yes list. Prescription meds. More than 1 million women go through menopause every year, according to the Study of Women's Health Across the Nation, SWAN. About 80% of them experience hot flashes, which can persist for 7 to 10 years. What causes them isn't fully understood. Research suggests that decreased estrogen makes the hypothalamus more sensitive to changes in body temperature, so it often mistakenly thinks you're too hot. This sets off cooling mechanisms such as sweating and flushing, open blood vessels near the skin, in an attempt to cool you down. Ironic, no? For decades, hormonal therapy, which reduces symptoms by roughly 90%, has been the only FDA-approved treatment for VMS. That changed in 2013, when Brisdell became the first FDA-approved non-hormonal treatment for moderate to severe VMS. The active drug in Brisdell is paroxetine, a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, SSRI, which in higher doses is used for depression, Paxil. After paroxetine was approved, it was crickets for a decade. Then, in May 2023, the FDA approved fezolinetant, marketed as Veozah. Veozah is the first drug of its kind, a neurokinin 3, NK3 receptor antagonist, and it works by binding and blocking a receptor in the brain that regulates body temperature. Its high price tag, around $550 a month, may be due to its first-to-market status, but it won't be alone on the shelves for long. Everybody's jumping into this hot flash treatment, says Stephanie Fabian, M.D., Director of Mayo Clinic Center for Women's Health and Medical Director for the Menopause Society. Bayer, for example, is working on a version called Elenzanentin. Earlier this month, the company announced the results of Phase 3 studies showing that the drug significantly reduced frequency and severity of moderate to severe vasomotor symptoms. Other medications for hot flashes are prescribed off-label. Some of those on the Menopause Society's list include gabapentin, an anticonvulsant and nerve pain medication, oxybutynin, approved to treat overactive bladder, and a few other antidepressants, venlafaxine, Effexor XR, citalopram, Celexa, and escitalopram, Lexapro. It was an SSRI that finally gave McDonald some relief, but it took about 18 months for her to try. I was like, oh my gosh, why do I have to take another freaking medicine, she recalls. But within a day, yes, one day of starting on Celexa, it reduced the hot flashes by at least 50%, if not 60%, she says. It was a huge overnight change. Psychological therapies. Clinical hypnosis and cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, both psychotherapies are effective non-drug options. Teresa Rush was already suffering from a nerve injury that caused excruciating pain and heat in her face when hot flashes added to her misery a few years ago. It's like my face was on fire, she says. The hot flash was like a blowtorch hit on top of that. Because the hot flashes were a secondary concern to finding relief from her nerve pain, HT never came up with her doctor. At one point, before the hot flashes, she was on gabapentin for the pain. Had it worked, it could have had the additional benefit of reducing hot flashes, but she couldn't stay on it. I felt like it broke my brain, Rush says. I couldn't even drive on it. Then, while Googling about hot flash research, she came across a recruitment site for a randomized clinical trial and learned of a study evaluating hypnosis for management of the menopausal symptoms. The study, funded by the National Institutes of Health, done in collaboration with Baylor University, aimed to determine the efficacy of self-administered hypnosis for the issue. Hypnosis is a mental state involving focused attention, reduced peripheral awareness, and an enhanced capacity to respond to suggestion, according to the American Psychological Association. For Rush, it was a godsend. Every day for 5 weeks, she spent about 15 minutes listening to audio recordings that first helped her relax into a hypnotic state, and then had her visualize walking down a mountain path on a cool day or sitting near a lake feeling a cool breeze. Within the first week, I was shocked. My hot flashes were down by half. I would never have believed that. And since the first day, I have not woken up with a hot flash in the middle of the night. 3 months after the trial's end, they had decreased by 88.14% from 59 per week to 7. The results of the study, which should be published by the end of the year, align with a 2013 study that examined practitioner-delivered hypnosis for hot flashes. Across studies, the results have been very consistent, says Gary Elkins, Ph.D. The research led on both studies and professor of psychology and neuroscience and director of the Mind-Body Medicine Research Lab at Baylor. This specific hypnotherapy intervention for hot flashes results in a 70% decrease in the frequency and severity of hot flashes at the end of a 5-week program. We believe that as hot flashes go away, the hypothalamus begins to regulate normally again, says Elkins. While hypnosis has been shown to reduce the frequency and severity of hot flashes, CBT, another recommended non-medical approach, works to make them less bothersome. The basic idea of CBT is that thoughts and emotions are related, so the focus is on coping with the symptoms, says Elkins, who teaches CBT at Baylor. For instance, if you feel a tsunami of heat coming on, you might start to panic and think, oh no, I'm about to start sweating in front of everyone. CBT teaches you how to catch the thought, pause, and manage the stress you feel about it with breathing or other exercises. Neither hypnosis nor CBT has side effects, and both can be used alone or in combination with other therapies, including HT. In the past, the only downside has been finding practitioners, but fortunately, research shows both treatments can be effective when self-directed. Rush is a proud convert. Even for people who are more resistant to hypnosis, try it, she says. It's literally the easiest thing you will ever do. You're sitting quietly in a nice place in your brain. Worst case scenario, you're going on a good vacation for 15 minutes. Where to find experts? Doctors and therapists. The Menopause Society's Find a Menopause Practitioner directory includes Menopause Society members and certified practitioners. Hypnotherapy and CBT. American Society of Clinical Hypnosis, ASCH, has an online directory that allows users to search by name or location. EVIA, that's spelled E-V-I-A, is a 5-week evidence-based digital hypnotherapy program delivered via mobile app based on Gary Elkins' research. The company offers a 7-day free trial. Psychology Today's director allows you to search by city or zip code and then under all filters by types of therapy. Check the boxes for CBT and/or hypnotherapy. Not all therapists who show up in the results will specialize in menopause, but they may still be able to help you or provide names of those who can. We're at the word of the week, meta-emotion. What happens when you feel bad about feeling bad? This article is by Jennifer King Lindley. Meta-emotion. It may sound like the term for those bouncy Facebook emoticons, but in fact, meta-emotions are feelings you feel about your feelings. You might feel embarrassed for crying through the notebook, say, or frustrated that you feel bored on a dream vacation. We have meta-emotions quite often, says Natasha Balin, PhD, a clinical psychologist at Massachusetts General Hospital and founder of Boston Anxiety and OCD, who has researched the topic. In one of her studies, subjects prompted by cell phone to log their emotional states throughout the day reported meta-emotions twice a week on average. It is our negative-negative meta-emotions that are the troubling ones, says Balin. That's when you feel bad about feeling bad. Feeling guilty for being angry when a friend snubs you just layers on extra suffering. How did we get so self-judgy? Meta-emotions may be influenced by how you were raised, says Balin. You might have gotten the message growing up that big kids don't cry, or that strong feelings are irrational or dangerous. To stop this painful editorializing, try to cultivate an appreciation for all your emotions, the good, the bad, the ugly. Negative emotions evolved for a reason, explains Balin. They play a vital role in our day-to-day functioning. Anger can alert us we have been wronged. Sadness can solicit care from our peeps. These emotions deserve our thanks, not our vitriol. Balin suggests downloading one of these ubiquitous emotion lists and getting in the habit of labeling precisely what you are feeling. The goal? To welcome all your emotions with curiosity, not judgment, and remind yourself that they're part of a richly textured life. This next article is Culture and News and Women Who Start Things. The Grass is Greener with Dawn Russell. The founder of 8 Greens shares her health journey and the inspiration behind the mission of her company. This article is by Sophia Lodato. 90% of Americans don't get their daily recommended amount of vegetables, something that 8 Greens founder Dawn Russell is on a mission to change. Her company aims to educate us about the importance of daily greens and help us get them in an easy and tasty way. For Russell, creating 8 Greens began out of necessity. She was diagnosed with stage 3 cancer at the age of 25, and she ended up traveling the world to research and fight her illness. Though she couldn't control everything about her cancer journey, one aspect she discovered she could control: shifting her diet to make sure her body was getting the nutrients it truly needed. And after navigating her illness and coming out the other side, Russell vowed to do something with her newfound knowledge. Russell spent 5 years testing and developing the first 8 Greens product, a fizzy tablet that can be mixed into a liquid. Her goal: to create something that was both healthy and tasty. The 8 greens she focuses on: spinach, kale, aloe vera, wheatgrass, blue-green algae, barley grass, chlorella, and spirulina, the benefits of which can all be read about in depth on her site. In her pursuit, Russell has also collaborated with Paula Trumbo, PhD, who worked at the FDA for more than 15 years, overseeing the scientific review and drafting of food and regulations to ensure that 8 Greens exceeds quality expectations. Now, many years later, 8 Greens comes in every form: powder, tablet, lollipops, gummies, and most important, none of them are concentrates or extracts. They're the real thing. This next article is in Books in the Culture and News section. What Happened When I Let Myself Be Seen? The author of You Could Make This Place Beautiful shares how exposing her life to the public led to deep internal change. The article is by Maggie Smith. For many years, I had a habit of compartmentalizing, trying to keep my professional life separate from my personal life, trying to keep my actual life out of my writing. I smiled on Instagram and chatted warmly with the neighbors, putting on a brave face even when my home life was falling apart. Like Clark Kent entering a phone booth in glasses and a suit, then exiting in spandex and a cape, I became adept at the quick change. Sometimes I was mom-me, daughter-me, friend-me, or neighbor-me. Other times I was author-me, teacher-me, or editor-me. None of my selves were superheroes, but all of them were strong and capable. A few of them soared. I think we all hold some of ourselves back, depending on the circumstances. But all of this compartmentalization comes at a cost. It left me feeling fragmented and a little lonely. How many people in my life knew all of me? It also left me feeling less than honest and exhausted. Trying to present only a part of who you are is a lot of emotional labor. assessing each environment and situation, choosing the pieces of yourself to share and the pieces to keep to yourself. But last year, I published a revealing memoir about the end of my marriage and the beginning of a new life. I was 46 years old, solo parenting two children, ages 10 and 14. The new life was precarious and full of unknowns, but it was mine, all of it. Writing something so personal was a deeply contextualizing experience, like unfolding a large map of my life on a table in front of me. Looking at the whole story helped me see the ways these different parts of my life are connected. My own upbringing, my marriage, my relationships with my kids, my relationships with my parents, all of these things came into contact with my work, my friendships, and my sense of self. Everything touches. You don't need to write a memoir to unfold the map and see the ways different pieces of your life border or overlap. You don't need to publicly share intimate details about your life to better integrate yourself, to be less splintered. But I learned something from writing a memoir, so you don't have to. Being yourself is a way of telling the truth. And, like telling the truth, being your whole self is not always easy, but it's simple. I'm a realist, though. I know that fragmentation is often about survival, and sometimes we sense when can't safely show up as our whole selves. Maybe you have a family or friends who aren't open to your religious or political beliefs. Maybe you're wary of revealing too much about your personal life at work in case it might hold you back. I'm not advocating for oversharing. Your coworkers don't need to know the intimate details of your life. But you can show them who you are and what's important to you. Your family doesn't need to understand every aspect of your professional life. But they should know your work, whatever it is, matters. I also know the deal we are asked to buy into time and time again as women. We are conditioned to be caregivers, and too often that translates to martyrdom. We are seen as good, even best, when we put others first. One of the aspects of my memoir that I was nervous about sharing had nothing to do with my relationship with my now ex-husband. It had to do with my relationship with ambition. The me who wanted to lean into my professional life was someone I had a hard time being openly as a devoted mother. Articulating that tension and sharing it helped me lean into it. When women reject the idea that we must fragment ourselves and be quieter, less needy, less ambitious to make others feel bigger and more secure, we take our power back. It's empowering to be more of yourself, not less. The people you want to attract will show up. The people you aren't in alignment with will naturally fall away. I've been thinking about the people I can be my whole self with and what it is about them that makes me trust them. They listen more than they talk. They don't judge me or saddle me with unsolicited advice. They want more from me than I sometimes think is possible. They counter my inner critic. I want to do this for others, to create an atmosphere in which the people in my life can show up whole, listen, accept, share. We can all do more of this, can't we? If we want to move through the world with integrity, we can start by showing up as our authentic selves, our whole, perfectly imperfect selves, no matter where we are. No one else can do that work for you, and it takes vulnerability and courage. But the thing I've learned about vulnerability and courage is that they're contagious. When one person is brave and open, it inspires and encourages others to be brave and open too. And there's a book that accompanies this article. It's You Could Make This Place Beautiful by Maggie Smith. Her name is spelled MaggieSmith, and this book is $14 at Amazon. Over in culture and news, Jennifer Lopez cancels her This Is Me Live tour to spend time with family. The star is taking time off to be with her children, family, and close friends. This article is by Maya Ernest. Jennifer Lopez has canceled her This Is Me Live summer tour. On May 31st, Live Nation announced that the tour, her first in 5 years, would no longer be happening because Lopez will be taking time off to be with her children, family, and close friends. The star also shared her own message with fans on her On the J-Lo website. I am completely heartsick and devastated about letting you down. Please know that I wouldn't do this if I didn't feel that it was absolutely necessary, she wrote in the statement. I promise I will make it up to you and we will all be together again. I love you all so much. Until next time. The announcement comes amid Lopez's reported marital struggles with husband Ben Affleck. Jen and Ben are continuing to take space from each other, a source told Entertainment Tonight earlier this week. They've been having issues for a few months and trying to figure things out on their own. According to the source, Lopez has been throwing herself into work as an outlet from stress. Although, judging by her tour cancellation, the distraction hasn't helped. Still, the couple reunited briefly recently, even walking hand in hand, as they left a graduation ceremony for Affleck's eldest child, Violet. According to the Daily Mail, Lopez and Affleck left the party together, and they drove to the home where Affleck has been staying during their time apart. As soon as the pair arrived at the residence, however, Lopez was seen getting into her car and zipping away almost immediately. The star emerged a few hours after announcing her tour cancellation. Presumably in need of some solace, she pulled up to the Mihran K, and that's M-I-H-R-A-N, dance studio in Burbank, where she exchanged hugs with several members of her team. Lopez kept herself comfy and ready to move in a white tank top, oversized ivory waffle knit top, and matching sweats. She accessorized with her wedding ring, white sneakers, and a large crocodile Birkin bag. Going on in culture and news, Angelina Jolie's daughter, Shiloh, files to drop father Brad Pitt's last name. Vivian and Zahara have also recently stopped using the surname. This article is by Rosa Sanchez. Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt's eldest biological daughter, Shiloh Novell Jolie Pitt, has decided to officially drop her estranged father's last name. Per TMZ, the teen filed legal paperwork requesting the legal name change. The filing took place on Memorial Day, May 27, which was also the day Shiloh turned 18, officially becoming an adult. Shiloh is one of Jolie and Pitt's three biological children, the other two being 15-year-old twins Vivian and Knox. The exes also share three adopted children, Maddox, 22, Pax, 20, and Zahara, 19. While Shiloh seems to be the only one of the Jolie Pitt children who has filed to legally drop her father's surname, Zahara has also been going only by Zahara Jolie, sans Pitt. In a recent performance for her college sorority, she introduced herself without her hyphenated surname and simply went by Zahara Marley Jolie. And Vivian, who recently helped her mother produce the Broadway show The Outsiders, opted to be credited in Playbill as Vivian Jolie, rather than her previous Vivian Jolie Pitt. Jolie and Pitt began dating in 2005 after falling in love on the set of action comedy Mr. and Mrs. Smith, while Pitt was still married to his first wife, Jennifer Aniston. The two officially wed in 2014 in an intimate ceremony attended by all their children. But in 2016, Jolie filed for divorce from Pitt, following an alleged altercation involving the kids on a plane. The actors have been embroiled in a messy legal battle over their separation, assets, and custody of their children since. Again, in culture and news, Dolly Parton weighs in on Beyoncé's bold Jolene cover. The country star was surprised by Beyoncé's new lyrics. This article is by Maya Ernest. Dolly Parton is finally weighing in on Beyoncé's cover of her iconic 1973 hit, Jolene. In a recent interview with E! News, Parton admitted she was surprised by the newest rendition of her song, since it didn't include her original lyrics. "I think it was very bold of Beyoncé," she told the publication. "When they said she was going to do Jolene, I expected it to be my regular one, but it wasn't. But I love what she did to it. And as a songwriter, you love the fact that people do your songs no matter how they do them." Parton then explained how Beyoncé truly made the song her own and even changed the meaning with her new lyrics. "She wasn't going to go beg some other woman like I did," said the country legend, whose original song asks Jolene not to steal her man. Instead, Parton paraphrased the new version. While Beyoncé's take on Jolene was a bit of a shock to the 78-year-old country music star, she went on to say she was proud of the singer's entire Cowboy Carter album. "I thought she did a great job in country music, and I thought it was great," Parton explained. "And I was just happy she did Jolene. I, of course, would have loved to have heard how she would have done it in its original way, but of course, you know, it's Beyoncé. Yeah, her life is different than mine." Parton recorded an interlude to Jolene named Dolly P for Cowboy Carter. When the album was released, she said she and Beyoncé celebrated working with each other, and we were sending each other flowers and little love notes and all that, Parton said. "So yeah, it's all good." Parts of this article were edited due to time. Going on in culture and news, Mandy Moore is pregnant with her third child. The actor is expecting a girl with husband Taylor Goldsmith. This article is by Maya Ernest. Mandy Moore is pregnant. On May 31, the actor shared she was expecting her third child with husband Taylor Goldsmith. The little one will grow her family from 4 to 5, as she already shares 2 children, Gus 2 and Ozzy 1, with her spouse. The This Is Us actor took to Instagram to announce her news, posting a photo of her 2 sons in respective big and middle graphic tees. "Sometimes life imitates art. The third in our own big 3 coming soon. Can't wait for these boys to have a baby sister," Moore wrote in her caption, but alluding to her This Is Us character and confirming that she was expecting her first daughter. In a separate snap, the actor, who shared a series of film photos capturing the reactions of her This Is Us co-stars Sterling Brown and Chris Sullivan, referencing their own big 3 on the show. Both looked shocked and overjoyed for Moore and embraced her in the last photo. "When telling the fam your big news is captured on film," she captioned the Instagram post. Moore's happy news comes after she shared her struggle to become pregnant with her first child, Gus. In a candid 2021 cover story for Romper, the actor said she consulted a fertility doctor before becoming pregnant, initially believing surgery would be necessary before she could carry a child. Doctors, she said, suspected she had endometriosis. I was fully prepared to go have surgery and fix my uterus and hopefully get rid of the endometriosis if it was there, Moore recalled. It was nice to have a plan and to know, okay, well, this is why I haven't been pregnant yet. But as the star geared up for surgery, a fertility specialist casually told her at an appointment that there was a slim chance of pregnancy. Lo and behold, Moore became pregnant with Gus shortly after, but felt she needed to wait before announcing her news, just in case there were any mishaps. Now it seems the actor is set on family planning. Her third child and first daughter is set to arrive toward the end of the year. Here's a gift idea for a child, Chance Bloom and Rise Basketballs. The AAPI founders designed these uplifting basketballs to remind players that life is about growth, not perfection, a concept you know I happen to agree with. So one of the balls is pink and has flowers all over it, and another ball is purple with gold trim. These basketballs are $30 at Amazon if you're interested in purchasing one of these. Another possible gift for a child is the Zuzu, that Z-U-Z-O-O, the Safari series. These high-top canvas shoes feature animal themes, come with facts about the species, and are adorable. Gail is getting a pair in Lello for her grandbaby, and they're $54 at Amazon, and they come in all kinds of colors. We've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Carrie Lawson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Again, that's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Again, that number is 919-832-5138. So long until next time.